Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. It is Monday, December the 3rd, 2018. And with the rest of the country and with much of the world, or at least those who are paying attention to things historic and monumental, we here at Faith Radio and here on Connecting Faith grieve with the Bush family today at the passing of George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st president of these United States. I particularly appreciated the way that those close to Bush Sr., let's call him, his inner circle, had chosen to communicate in a very private way following his death. They'd all agreed in advance that the call sign of his passing would be CAVU, which is a Navy abbreviation for Ceiling and Visibility Unlimited. You should consider that for a moment. Ceiling and Visibility Unlimited. And that is, those are the four letters that were sent about to those in the Bush inner circle, indicating that those who knew him best, the one that the rest of us have known as the 41st president of the United States, had indeed died. And now you and I understand that that's a message that indicates not only his naval service to us as a country, but also as a Christian, that he's now flying home in skies where both the ceiling and visibility are truly unlimited. So it's just one of the small pieces of information that you and I can use in our conversations with others as we seek to reconnect the eternal with the everyday today. That's our job. That's our role. That's our responsibility in the world, to be people who whose hearts are set on heaven, whose minds are set on things that are above and not on the things of this earth. But as people who reconnect the eternal with the everyday for others, we actually serve as an ambassador between the kingdom of heaven and the kingdoms of this world. And that means that we have to actually point out the truth of things like, hey, that four-letter CAVU, Ceiling and Visibility Unlimited, is not just a naval abbreviation about skies. It's actually indicated or meant to indicate that now George Herbert Walker Bush sees endlessly at a height that really cannot be measured or even imagined. There was also the exchange between George Herbert Walker Bush and his lifelong friend and confidant, James Baker. Their conversation, very brief, went something like this on the day that he died. Where are we going, Bake? Said the former president to his dear friend of many, many decades. Baker said, we're going to heaven. And the president said, I'd like that. And then there was the final call with his son, George W. Bush, the 43rd president of the United States, where 43 says, I love you, and 41 responds, I love you too. Those are the final words that are recorded as having been spoken by the older to the younger, President Bush. But that might give us pause and bring us to a question. What do you want the last words on this earth to be for you or for those that you love? How do you want to be remembered? What's the legacy you want to leave behind? And there might then also be a very provocative question that you might engage with others on. And that would be, if these were the last words spoken to him and by him upon this earth, words of love, genuine affection between a father and his son, both who astonishingly are both presidents of the United States, the most powerful position in all of the world. This is what they had to say to one another, right? I love you, and I love you too. What do you suppose? I mean, again, this is pure speculation. This is allowing our holy imaginations to work. What do you think the first words spoken in heaven have been upon his arrival? It's hard for us to imagine, right? And here we would want to sing. We'd want to hear Bart Menard sing. We might not want to sing it, but we'd want to hear him sing it. You know, I can only imagine what those reunions are like to arrive in heaven. Speculation about heaven is actually the wide open door of conversation today, as we remember a good man who gave his life in the service of the public good. I want to invite you to use what God gives today. Use this life of this extraordinary individual who I think would prefer to be remembered as a fairly ordinary guy who loved to drive his boat really fast off the coast of Maine and liked to jump out of airplanes and loved his wife of more than 70 years and who wrote letters instead of communicating in all the ways that now obsess us. And about whom really nothing bad can be said. I mean, there are certainly policy things that people can point out that with which they might disagree. But there's really nothing bad that can be said of the man. That is extraordinary in the world today. Last of a generation, the last U.S. president to have not only served in World War II, but really to be of the generation of the World War II generation. So what might it look like to use the passing of this president over the course of the next several days, when this is going to be what the country is focused on, to lead into conversations with others about eternal things? This is an opportunity to talk about legacy and testimony, and this is an opportunity to talk about God, and it's an opportunity to talk about the state of things as the former president lies in state at the U.S. Capitol in the coming days. As the nation observes a day of mourning on Wednesday and a funeral to be held at the National Cathedral in D.C., and then his body will be flown back to Houston with his family, where it will lie in repose at the same church where his Barbara Bush, her funeral was held just this past April. And then the casket and the president's remains are going to travel by train to College Station, where he will finally be laid to rest at the Bush Presidential Library. It's been nearly 12 years since we as a nation have laid a president to rest. That was Gerald Ford. It's been nearly 20 years since we have done so, with a president that frankly a lot of people, generations of people, were engaged with and remember, and that would be Ronald Reagan. I actually was in D.C. when Ronald Reagan lay in state with a group of teenagers. And so we, although we were there as tourists and, we were in our shorts and T-shirts and tennis shoes and clearly not appropriately clad for such a magnanimous event, I felt like it was important, even though we were there on a mission trip, was important for those young kids to have the opportunity, and for me to have the opportunity to participate in not just what is civil religion, but really for a proclamation of the power of the resurrection of Jesus Christ to deliver us to life eternal with God. So as the week unfolds, I'm going to encourage you to focus on that. And we here on Connecting Faith will certainly dip our toe in this story every day this week so that we can be participating in the conversation that the culture is having, and we can be equipped to enter into those conversations in ways that honor Jesus and really get God back into the conversation about these things. This is a good opportunity, really good opportunity to reconnect the eternal with the everyday. All right, one other quick story before we have to go to a break here, and that is about college football. If you weren't paying attention to the SEC championship game on Saturday, well, that just probably means you live in some part of the country where football is not quite as much a part of the culture as it is in the southeastern United States. What those of us in the Southeastern Conference actually do believe was the national championship game took place on Saturday when the University of Alabama faced off with the University of Georgia. And in that game, it looked for all the world like Georgia was going to win. But that's not, in fact, how it ended. It also looked like what eventually happened, I'll just go ahead and tell you. Spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it and you weren't paying attention to this. The University of Alabama entered into last year's national championship game with a quarterback whose name is Jalen Hurt. Jalen Hurt got hurt in that game, and he was replaced by a freshman quarterback who we just call Tua, and that's because his full name, Tua. And then I'm just not even going to try to pronounce his last name. So I'm just going to skip it. It's really super long. They just call him Tua. And so Tua actually performed really in an extraordinary way in the 2018 College Football National Championship game and led Alabama to a victory. And so Tua then became the quarterback, and Jalen Hurt became the backup quarterback. Well, in what has been described by many as a redemption story, certainly a turn of events that is interesting and fascinating, the backup became the hero in an instant. Now, the backup became a hero in an instant in that championship game at the beginning of the year, and now the backup, Jalen Hurt, has become the hero in an instant when Tua got hurt in this game this past Saturday. So it is a story of redemption. You're going to hear that word thrown around. And I think that not only are the testimony of these two young men really critical and important to watch and listen to, because I think that they give profound testimony in who they are and how they and how they play, and that the fact that they play with each other with great respect. But it also gives us an opportunity to use this to help people understand what redemption really is. And redemption really is the narrative of God over all of human history. And that's what we want to be encouraging people to remember. So be sure you tell people the real redemption story, even as they are focused on football. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to have a conversation with Ellie Holcomb. You know her as a singer and songwriter. We are going to talk about her book, Who Sang the First Song? Friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge, and we'll be right back. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I am joined now by Ellie Holcomb. You recognize her name as a musician, an artist, a singer, a songwriter. You may not know her as an author, which is the way I want to introduce Ellie today to the Faith Radio listening audience. So, Ellie Holcomb, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you. It is so fun to be here.
Okay, it is so fun to have you here. And let me just tell folks that the book we're talking about is Who Sang the First Song? And friends, if you have a child that is sort of in the board book age group, I'm telling you that I have 3- and 4-year-old grandbabies and they love this book. I have a special needs junior high student who reads at about a second grade level. He loves this book.
Oh.
The art in this book, the illustration in this book, the words are wonderful, but the art actually moves. There is depth, there is beauty, there is song in a book that doesn't make any noise. And so I wanted to just celebrate it. I don't normally gush. I do a lot of author interviews, Ellie, and I don't often gush, but I'm gushing over Who Sang the First Song.
Oh, thank you so much. That makes my heart so glad. Just hearing that little people and big people are reading it means the world. And I'm so, so delighted with how it all turned out.
So let me tell you that the little Firefly page, I mean, it's probably not technically the Firefly page, but we think of it as the Firefly page. That page actually led to a conversation about, because it's not Firefly season here in Nashville, but when it's Firefly season, you and I both know what that's like, and our yards are just jammed full of fireflies, and we collect a lot of fireflies at our house, and you know, we let them go the next day, but we collect a lot of them, and so one of my little people was, I mean, huge, wide eyed, and like, do you think they sing? Like, we haven't been listening to them. Do you think they sing? I know. So I'm just letting you know that as soon as the fireflies are back out, mine are not just going to be looking at the fireflies. They're going to be like holding the jar up to their ears. Like, do you think they're singing? So anyway, it's just beautiful. So let's introduce people to the concept. The question is, who sang the first song? That's the title of the book. That's also the question posed to us. So let me just pose that question, Ellie. Who sang the first song?
Yeah, here's the deal. This whole book was inspired by my little girl who was 4 at the time, and she asked me that question. And I didn't know the answer at first, Carmen. I just was like, I did what any parent does when they don't know what to say. I just said, that is a great question. What do you think? And she said, Dolly Parton.
Amen.
I thought that is a Tennessee girl through and through, but I may need to do some research. And what I found was, I listened to this wonderful, I stumbled upon this wonderful sermon by Tim Keller, where he talks about Genesis chapter one. And he says, we often look at, you know, how the earth was made, how God created the earth, but he explores why God made the earth. And he's discovered in his research that Genesis chapter one is written in the form of an archaic Hebrew poem. And so it is literally as if God sang the world into being. And why would he do that? Because he wanted each one of us and creation itself to sing the extravagant song of his love and faithfulness.
I just love that. So this, you really designed this book to spark conversation, like not to spark conversation with our kids and
That's right.
and in our families. So talk a little bit about how you envision parents engaging their kids or grandparents engaging their grandkids or any of us that have children in our spheres of influence. How do you, in your wildest imagination, how do you see us using this as a conversation starter with them?
I love that. Well, part of that is just the conversation that you mentioned before. Just, do the fireflies sing? I love this idea of giving kids the concept that everything on this earth that was made to create glory, to sing God's glory. And so, and each one of us was made to sing God's glory. And that doesn't have to be with a song. So I hope that it will be, like you said, a conversation starter. And I hope the conversations will gear themselves towards kids recognizing beauty around the earth and the way that creation itself sings a song of God's love for us. And then what I really hope it'll start is conversations about the way God made each one of us uniquely and gave each one of us different gifts that we can use to sing God's love and God's faithfulness into this dark and weary world. And that can be with an actual song or what I think the conversation I'd love for parents and kids to have is how do we sing with our very lives? Like we don't even have to use words. We don't have to have a melody, but how can we create beauty and goodness and send it out into the world? Because that's what God does for us. He's beauty and he's goodness and he's faithfulness and he's love. And how can we reflect all of that into the world that we live in?
So one of my older kids, you know, the immediate connection that was made for them was with the Casting Crown song, Life Song, because they do want their life song to sing and they want to find their voice and they want to be a person who is a living demonstration of the gospel in the world and in that way bear the image of God, not just in maybe our good deeds or in our private prayers, but actually in the way we add our voice to the cacophony of voices in the world, which often are not beautiful and affirming.
Right.
And so, there are so many layers to this book. Again, friends, if you're listening, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. My conversation partner is Ellie Holcomb. You recognize her as a beautiful songwriter and singer. But we're talking today about her book, which is called Who Sang the First Song? And let me tell you, it's a book that sings. The words sing and the illustrations sing. They dance off the page. So let's talk about the illustrator. How did you choose this particular illustrator? Because that's, you know, not every children's book and certainly not every children's board book dances off the page like this one does.
I love that. Well, I think it was really important to me to find someone who could be both sophisticated, but also whimsical and playful. And so I was so grateful. My publisher actually let me just scour the internet. And I actually found Kayla Heron, who is the illustrator of the book. I found her on Instagram with a hashtag children's illustrator that I was searching through on Instagram. And when I saw her work, I wanted every type of child to be portrayed. And it's actually hard to find a children's illustrator that can draw many different ethnicities because I wanted it to represent all kinds of children from all over the world. So she did that in her work. And then her work jumped off the page at me and it usually made me laugh or I found myself smiling when I would look at it. And I just thought if she would say yes to drawing the pictures for the illustrations for this book, I would just lose it. And so I was over the moon when she agreed to partner with me.
So friends, the publisher has shared with us some copies of the book. If you would like to enter a drawing to receive a copy of Who Sang the First Song by Ellie Holcomb, you can either text me 877-933-2484 or you can send me an email, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Again, if you want to enter the drawing for one of the copies of Who Sang the First Song by Ellie Holcomb, you can do so by texting 877-933-2484 or emailing me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. I feel like we ought to let B&H know and Lifeway know that we're going to need a lot of copies.
I love that so much.
Okay, so let me ask this, because you have kids, and obviously you've already alluded to that in our conversation. When you think about singing, obviously you've been singing longer than the period of time in which you've been a mom. But how has your own life song changed? How has your singing changed? How have the songs that you sing changed by having kids?
Oh man, that is a great question. You know what? I think my favorite thing about having kids, like the best accountability partners in the world, because all you want to do is you want them to know and understand the love of God for them. And so faith becomes, if it wasn't before for me, faith has become much more integrated in my everyday life. In ordinary everyday things, I feel like I am trying to pull in truth and remind myself and then teach my kids and sing for them what's true in our everyday lives. And so I am just so grateful just for the gift of getting to enter in the everyday ordinary moments to weave the truth of God's love and his faithfulness into that. And I think I want that's why I wrote this book. I wanted kids to know, I think we all want to know what we were made for, like what our life song is, what are we here for? And we are here to declare the glory of God. And we can do that in a myriad of ways. And so calling out those gifts has been really beautiful in my kids and teaching them to sing and then singing along with them, letting them write songs about what they're experiencing, whether they're sad or joyful or they're grateful. And so it has been a really fun and integrative thing. So I would say singing is more integrated in my life than it has ever been before.
It's interesting that you you allude to sadness in that part of the conversation, because that was actually one of the conversations that arose out of this book with one of my older kids. And that was a conversation about the first sad song and acknowledging that the first sad song was also sung by God in grieving over the choice that Adam and Eve made in the Garden of Eden, and that God still hears creation groan in a groaning, sad song with eager longing for redemption. And so the stretch of this book, the breadth of this book theologically, is really broad. And I wanted just to, you know, I wanted to affirm that to you as well. Hey, Ellie, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, can you and I talk about Christmas? Because that's the season that we're entering into. And then I'd love to talk with you just a little bit about the life of a singer-songwriter. And because I don't think everybody knows that, you know, that makes you a small business person. Like, right. That means that there's just a lot to what you do. So I'd love to get into that with you as well after the break. Can we do that?
Absolutely.
Hey, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. When I come back, I'm going to continue my conversation with Ellie Holcomb. Friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, joined today in conversation by Ellie Holcomb. You can follow her on Twitter at Ellie Holcomb. You can find her online at ellieholcomb.com. Our conversation to this point has been about her excellent book, which is entitled Who Sang the First Song? I do have copies. We're going to do a drawing for those, so you can text me at 877-933-2484, or you can email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. Ellie, again, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you. It's so fun to be here with you today.
Well, thank you. It's a joy to have you with us as well. So it is, we are, you know, we're charging ahead to the Christmas season. And some of, you know, all of my neighbors are already decorated. I shamefully am not quite all decorated yet. But talk with us about this particular season. Talk with us about this season in terms of singing, and talk with us about just for you, what does the Christmas season look like as a mom and as an entertainer?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love this season. And honestly, being a mom, I think has helped me enter into this season in a more intentional way than I ever have in the past. And I was laughing because my children and I was dropping my daughter off at kindergarten and she was like, "Mom, what's Advent?" And I just love that we're having those conversations. And I ended up going, "Hey Siri, what's Advent?" Cause I just wanted to know what the official like definition was. And so we had this beautiful conversation about waiting for the arrival of something momentous. And we got to have this beautiful conversation about the thing that the earth waited for, that's the most momentous thing that has ever happened, is the birth of Jesus Christ, our rescuer. And so it is such a joy to enter into that season. And we kind of read through this wonderful book called the Jesus Storybook Bible that kind of takes us through the gospel. And I just said, Advent is the time when we remember how God sent his son Jesus to come and rescue us. And it has been the most beautiful thing, retelling that story with my kids and reliving that story with my kids. So we read a story every day in December. We actually started early because inevitably we miss a few days. And we color an ornament for each story and put it up on a little paper tree that we have on a wall in our kitchen. And that has just been a beautiful way to remember the overarching story of God's faithfulness and that God comes to find his lost treasure and we are his treasure. And so I'm so grateful for a season to remember that. And it is crazy season for us as a musician, just balancing that, the delicate balance of working and traveling. You have to leave home to go to work. And then also, you know, wanting to draw close and be near your people. So we do a combination of leaving for small shows, just one-offs, and then actually I'm bringing my children on a couple of shows with me, and they'll be side stage as we're singing, and so they'll get to be a part of the celebration with us as we're at work.
Oh, I love that. I think that we all increasingly have to sort of figure out ways to make life work and make work part of life so that the rhythm of it makes sense for us. And, you know, and the rhythm of your life and the rhythm of my life are probably very different than the rhythm of other people's lives. And so I just, I appreciate you being vulnerable and giving us a little window into that. And so I have become aware of just how complex the life of a singer, songwriter, musician really is, and all of the layers that most of us on the outside of the music industry simply are not aware of. So maybe you could just like share with us, like, so we've all learned through Schoolhouse Rock, like how a bill becomes a law. Could you give us like a Schoolhouse Rock on how does a little thought of inspiration become a song?
I love that so much. Well, if I was going to use a metaphor, I would say it starts with a seed, and the seed would be an idea, a thought, a truth. Usually for me, it's scripture, something that's true that I either am having a hard time believing or I'm having a hard time remembering. And so I take that little seed and I water it with a melody and I start singing. And the words don't all make sense at first. And I go through and I guess you would call it weeding. I weed out the words that don't work and leave the things that do. And then they need time to grow. And so I give them time. And sometimes I pull in another gardener to help me weed and to help me know what to feed, because what you feed will grow. And so it's a really beautiful process, making a song. And sometimes it happens really fast. And sometimes it's a slower process of growing a complete and beautiful thought that's really well constructed with the melody and then with scripture woven in as well. And it is a beautiful thing and feels like an extravagant gift for me to get to nurture and grow songs in that way.
And then from there, and again, friends, my conversation partner is Ellie Holcomb. You can find her online at ellieholcomb.com. You can find her on Twitter at Ellie Holcomb. From there, so now you have this song and you know that it works for you. How do you decide and sort of like who's involved in the process of that then becoming something that I hear on the radio or I hear on Spotify or I hear on Pandora? Or do you see what I'm saying? Like, because I think we have no idea all of the parts and pieces that go into that. And part of, Ellie, what, you know, what I'm kind of trying to do is help people see and understand that you are a businesswoman and that we need to pay for what you do. Because first of all, we can't do it. We thoroughly enjoy and love it. And if we just download stuff for free, you don't get paid. And so part of this is like helping people understand that the people who they love singing with, that this is also your business.
It's a work. Yeah, sure. It is work that I love, but it is work for sure. So for each record that I write, or that I release, I probably write anywhere from 45 to 80 songs, which is kind of crazy.
Crazy.
You can imagine the amount of time that it takes to cultivate and to grow the songs and then to weed out the ones that don't work. In a lot of the ways that I decide, what stays and what goes is I sing them. I sing the songs for my kids. I wait and see if they sing them back to me, if they're singing them later. If they're not singing them later, I just think this needs to be better. Because if I'm going to be writing truth that I hope will sink deep into people's hearts, I want it to be presented in a memorable and easily rememberable way. I just want it to be able to stick with people. And so I usually start with my family, with a small group of people, like my community, playing the songs for them. I play them for my managers. And then the ones that kind of make it through that vetting process, I'll play at a show and see how people respond. So I may not have recorded this song yet, but I want to see if the song connects with people, because at the end of the day, what I'm wanting to do is build bridges to other people's stories so I can connect them to the ultimate bridge builder, Jesus. And if people aren't responding to the song, I put it away and I either work it, craft it to be something that people will connect with more, or I throw it away and I say, okay, we're going to start over and re-approach that idea, that little seed, from a different perspective.
I love that. And thank you for sharing all of that, because I do think that it helps us understand, you know, that there's a person behind not just the song and the words, but the music. And there's a person and a group of people behind bringing that to the rest of us.
Sure.
And there, you know, we all know driving down the road, right? The things that we love to sing and love to sing along with, in our cars or when we're working out on our headphones or however you want to think about that. So, I hope that you recognize that part of what you're doing each and every day is equipping and empowering the rest of us to worship. That if we did not have people like you, we would have a much more difficult time, giving God his due, like returning to him the worthiness of who he is, because you are helping us sing the truth of who God is and the reality of life back to him. You are helping us put words and a melody to what's often on our hearts, but sometimes, you know, it's hard to figure out for a lot of folks how to put that into words, and certainly difficult to attach it to a melody. So thank you for what you do every single day as an artist. Thank you for what you do every single day, discipling those little people as a mom. Thank you for what you do every day as a wife. And thank you for what you have done for us in this book, Who Sang the First Song. And it's just, it's a precious gift. And I think it's a good gift book this Christmas. And so we just appreciate your willingness to come on and share it with all of us here on Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much for your kind words, and thank you for spending some time with me this morning. I'm honored to be here with you.
Well, thank you for spending time with us. All right, friends, that's Ellie Holcomb. You can find her online at ellieholcomb.com. You can follow her on Twitter at Ellie Holcomb. The book is Who Sang the First Song, and I do have copies if you'd like to enter the drawing. You can text me at 877-933-2484, or you can email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. I got to take one more quick break. When we come back, we'll be making the connecting point. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBerge. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Wow, you guys, you are really excited about the book, and I am thrilled that you're so excited about the book. Thank you for blowing up our text line and my email. This might be a little shout out to B&H. We're definitely going to need more copies of who sang the first song. So thank you again to Ellie Holcomb for joining us today. Okay, so from one singer-songwriter to another, today's Connecting Point, we're going to focus on what's going on with Lauren Daigle. Lauren Daigle has a new album out. It's got really great crossover appeal into the mainstream culture. I think that is pretty extraordinary, but Lauren has been criticized by Christians for some of the choices that she's made in terms of where she has appeared, like on the Ellen DeGeneres show. People are concerned. So I'm actually going to bring a 20-something on right now to help me have this conversation, because since I am basically old enough to be their mom, like, it feels like it's generationally important for me to have this conversation with somebody in the generation with whom we are interested in having this conversation. And so joining me today is one of our producers. Her name is Rachel Sutton. Rachel, thank you for joining me on the mic.
Absolutely.
So you're in your very early 20s,
yes.
And when we're going to have these conversations about Lauren Daigle, so tell people who she is and why you like to listen to her.
Yeah, so Lauren Daigle is, I would call her a Christian singer. She's released a worship album, and this latest album, she really was honest about her faith in saying that that she would not say she wants it to just be a faith that's her parents' faith or things like that. So kind of saying, this is my own faith, and I'm wanting this to be real with me and God, that this is a relationship, not just a religion. So I would say reasons that we listen to her, she is just an amazing singer, for one. She has a great voice. And for two, she's real with people. She's honest and down to earth.
So for those folks who are not aware of Lauren Daigle, I'm pretty sure she like won American Idol, didn't she? Like, is that how she came onto the scene? Do you recall that at all?
I'm not
sure. Am I making that up?
So
I feel like I'm not making that up, although people might now be checking me to see if that's true. And she appeared on an episode of the Ellen DeGeneres show back in October, and some Christians then began criticizing her for that. And so, and the reason behind that, Rachel, is that, and everybody knows this, like, this is a publicly known fact, Ellen DeGeneres is gay. And so the criticism was, you know, why would you as a Christian artist, you know, utilize, even celebrate the platform of a person who is living in a way that's contrary to what God has revealed is his best for human relationships. So let's just talk about that for a moment. Let's just talk about, from your perspective, you know, is good, bad, or indifferent in terms of Christians taking advantage of using the platforms that God provides to us in the culture, regardless of sort of whose platform it is?
Yeah, I personally would not say that there's anything wrong with her going on Ellen's show. I think ultimately, all of us are sinners, right? And so no matter who we're interacting with, right now I'm on Connecting Faith, which you host, and you're a sinner.
Hosted by total sinner. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I think that's really where we bring the conversation there, is this is an amazing, incredible platform that she's been offered as a Christian to bring her music. And hopefully people will listen to that and hear the gospel through that. And so I would say I absolutely think she should go on that show.
So in an interview with the Christian Post, they ask her if she's afraid that as her music becomes appealing to the world, and that as she appeals to the world with her message of hope, if she shares the fear of others that this is going to lead her astray, to abandon her worship roots and become a secular artist. And I'm going to read her response so that folks in the listening audience can sort of understand the heart of this particular musician. She says, "My music is having crossover appeal, but it doesn't mean that I'm leaving one for the other, or that I'm going to be swept up in one thing or the other. For me, it's like, oh, everything just got even more clear. Everything just got more clear as to why it is that we go and love people who are outside of the walls of the church, outside of the walls that we're comfortable with. And again, friends, we're talking about Lauren Daigle. Her latest album, Look Up Child, debuted at number 3 on Billboard's 200 chart following its release in September. She's beating out popular secular musicians. And so, you know, I find myself wondering, Rachel, you know, like, why is it that we as Christians can't simply celebrate the success of a Christian who is obviously winning in the marketplace of ideas? Like, what do you think that says about us?
Yeah, I think that's a tricky question. I think people worry about her as a Christian, possibly, and that worry can be rooted in a genuine love for a fellow believer. But I think also worry is not biblical, and it's not something that we're called to let take over our thoughts. And so in that, I think we should be standing around her as the church, saying, we'll hold you up. And this is definitely a tricky spot that she's been put in as a Christian artist in a secular world. And there's going to be challenges, but I think our attitude towards her should be, let's support her and hold her up in this ministry that she now has, versus let's worry about her to the point of maybe criticizing her ministry.
All right. So now I'm going to drill down to the very specific question that she was asked. And her response and reaction to it. So after her appearance on the Ellen DeGeneres show, and after some of the blowback that she got from, you know, from folks basically on social media, she appeared on the Dominic Natty show. And one of the questions that he just came right out and asked her was whether or not homosexuality is a sin. Now I got to tell you, that is that's a setup question. Like, right? I mean, that feels like a no-win situation for me in terms of engaging with a person in the media. I just think there's no way to give a soundbite answer to a question like that that is that's going to be theologically accurate and winsome in terms of having the responsibility to be a person who's advancing the gospel in a very secular culture. So let me read her answer. She said, I can't honestly answer on that in the sense of I have too many people that I love and they're homosexuals. I can't say one way or the other. I'm not God. When people ask questions like that, I just say, read the Bible, find out for yourself. And when you find out, let me know because I'm learning too. Now, Rachel, let me unpack there what I see in her answer and tell me if you see and hear some of the same things or where you see and hear things differently.
Okay.
First of all, she is clearly in fellowship with, in friendship with people who are homosexuals. She says that as much. You know, there's too many people that I love that are homosexuals. So from the conversations that we have had with guys like Christopher Yuan, or conversations that we have had with Rosaria Butterfield or others who are really doing a very good job helping educate us that hospitality, that being in friendship and fellowship with folks who are in any kind of identity confusion or sexual doing things that are not aligned with God's best, let's say. You know, they have been really clear that, hey, the relationship is the way that we get into enough of a fellowship with other people that we earn the right to even begin talking about such things. And so it feels like she's in those kinds of relationships. And what the interviewer is asking her to do is burn those relationships by making some sort of public declaration of her theology. Is that what it feels like to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's such a politicized topic that no matter, like you were saying, there's not really a good way to win this answer, to be able to please everyone with one answer.
Yeah. So the other thing that I got out of her answer is, you know, she is acknowledging that she's not God. And then she's challenging the person asking the question to do what actually we should all challenge one another to do. And that's go to the scriptures for the answer. She's not saying God does not answer this question. She's saying, I'm not God. I'm not answering this question. God has answered this question. I would invite you to go search out the heart and the mind of God revealed in the scriptures of the Old and New Testaments. Go read the Bible and find out for yourself. And when you find out, because she already knows what they're going to find out, right, when they go there. Then she's inviting them to return for a follow-up conversation. When you find out, let me know, because I'm learning too. Like, that feels so genuine and so, like, the right thing that we should be doing, encouraging people to go to the scriptures for themselves, find out what God has said. We know what they're going to find when they go there. It's clear. It's very clear. And then come back and let's talk about it, because I'm actually interested in continuing this conversation. That's what it feels like to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I really do think it is. It's an artful answer. It's a good, it sounds like a very carefully thought out answer to this. And I do think as Christians, we should know what we believe on this. So I think there's a lot to digging into biblical truth. And then, but kind of the caveat to that is if you don't, if you're still wrestling with it, I appreciate her answer of honesty saying, I'm not sure. And this is a tricky one to answer. So yeah, and pointing back to God and saying, let God answer this for you and go dig into it.
So you are in your very early 20s. Talk with us about sort of the range of views that people in your sphere of, you know, sphere of relationships, the views on identity and sexuality that might differ from the views held by those in, you know, maybe more traditional older generations.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing because right now the LGBT community is very outspoken, very prominent. It's something that people talk about all the time in the news. And so it's been an interesting thing growing up in a setting where people will ask me as a Christian, what do you believe on this? And those conversations are so important. And so I think from seeing the views of people that I've grown up with, there's a difference if you're talking about in a Christian circle versus in a non-Christian circle. And you really have to know what you believe on it and be able to answer and be able to answer with, you know, speaking the truth in love as we're called to do in Scripture.
Hey, Rachel, thank you so much for adding to the conversation today. Friends, that's Rachel Sutton. She's actually behind the scenes every single day on Connecting Faith, making the magic of radio happen, along with Ted Rossing. And so thank you to the two of you in studio today, as always, for helping make Connecting Faith a reality to the listening world.
Yeah, thanks, Carmen.
Okay, so I'm gonna spend the next minute, you know, sort of like wrapping up my thoughts on this subject matter and encouraging you to really consider the kinds of questions that we should be asking. When somebody, in this case, we're talking about Lauren Daigle, but we could be talking about any Christian who is given a high-profile platform in the culture. And whether or not, then we should start picking up and chunking stones at them because they got the platform. Because that just seems like jealousy to me. That does not seem like an honest seeking to uplift and pray for and encourage those who have been given a crossover appeal. I want you to think about that word for just a moment. I would love to have some crossover appeal. Like, I would love for the distinctively Christian worldview to be of enough significant interest to people in the culture that Connecting Faith was something they wanted to listen to. That's what's happening with Lauren Daigle. Friends, she writes worship songs, and what she has released is a worship album. Why should we not be like thrilled that it has crossover appeal? And again, the cross does not have much crossover appeal. The cross is a stumbling block. And so for a Christian to be publicly worshiping God and publicly providing for the means through which others can worship God, for God to have given her the blessing of success in that is, I think, something that we should celebrate. So I'm going to encourage you to do a little research on Lauren Daigle. Go back and read the interview that she gave to Billboard a couple of years ago when she first found success, or success found her, or God blessed her with success, or however you want to think about that. And consider the ways in which God is using her as an agent of his grace in the culture to reach people in her generation in ways that, frankly, the rest of us would have a hard time doing. All right, that's literally all the time we've got here today. Thank you for joining me here on Connecting Faith. We'll be right back here tomorrow. Have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith.
These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.